Universal design is the concept of creating inclusive environments, products, services and technology that can be used by as many people as possible without the need for adaptation. Michelle Santive is a member of the City of Adelaide Access and Inclusion Advisory Panel and spoke at last week's Universal Design Forum here in Adelaide. We sat down for a chat and she began by explaining how her passion for universal design first started.
My passion for universal design actually came through my work in crime prevention, and particularly from a women's safety point of view. So I really examined it in the mid-1990s from a crime prevention through environmental design point of view. That is how I moved into universal design. And my premise basically for universal design, and this was the first part of my presentation, is if you basically cater for every life condition and life stage of womanhood, you pretty much cater for all humanity. The only thing you then need to cater for in terms of men is their average mean height. So that's really all you need to take into account. So for me, I have a very womanhood and all their stages and life conditions. If you design for that, you've basically catered for all of humanity.
That's an interesting segue into universal design with the crime background. How did that lend itself to thinking about universal design?
So one of the key things around crime prevention through environmental design was looking at how spaces harbour perception of fear and how spaces actually prevent observation, how they offer spaces for hiding, how they offer spaces for getting away, how they offer spaces for being stuck. So basically through looking at environments and looking at textures, lighting, corners, trees, a whole range of things, you could actually design spaces that became passive prevention and or active observation. So it was a wonderful kind of segue into the world of access and inclusion in design.
And this idea that you're talking about during your presentation is design is a behaviour and not an object, how spaces influence our movements and how we act and how we interact with each other.
Yes, I think it's very important to acknowledge the privatisation of what's happening to our public spaces and the private securitisation of what's happening to our spaces. That in the name of national security, our places are becoming policised. Not only politicised, but policised. And I think it's really important that we move away from that, we challenge that. And one of the ways that those spaces are reinforced as privatised and policised is through the language of signs and the visual coding of signs. We are bombarded by no entry, big red danger signs, arrows, bars, cross-through things, do not do this, you'll be punished if you do this, there's a warning for this, a fine for that. All our language is around fear and punishment, and it buys into that, and or you can't be in the space unless you bought something. So it's public signage for me is actually an incredibly, which was the major theme of my presentation, is actually a very powerful means to subvert, to look at how do we actually want our citizens to behave in public spaces. So what codes are we giving them in the language we use and the visual codes and colours we're doing in the signs?
Even with the policing that you're talking about, it reminds me of how once upon a time it was a crime to stand around and look around and not be heading in a particular direction. There's a word for it. Loitering. I mean, these days it seems like such a crazy idea, but I'm sure in 20 years' time we'll be looking back at how we're living now and the signage we're using now and think, oh, that's a little bit old-fashioned, that's a bit old hat.
Mm. I mean, another example is there's often good into the loitering came because of gay beats and homelessness. So again, it was politicising places and was about exclusion because it came from increased rates of homelessness, but also about concern around homosexual beats. So loitering came from, and alcohol in public spaces. There's also a racist element. So there's a whole systemic context to the words of signage, like, do not loiter here. And the other really interesting one that got me onto this whole issue about signage was I remember going to... I used to live in a unit in North Adelaide, and there was a children's playground across the street, well, a park, and it had swings. Now, nearly all of North Adelaide is units, so the public parks, full of young people, like mid-20s, late-20s, lots of older people. So public space and public parks are really important. One day I went to and I saw a sign. Adults are not allowed to use the playground unless accompanied by a child. Suddenly I was prohibited from swinging, from using the public park and getting some activity. So this became, that is really where my passion for public signage came from. I wrote to the council and I pretty much got nowhere. So good intention, because I know what the intent was. Again, it was about fear, but it came from a place of fear. And what they did was they actually did the complete opposite in terms of their action to what was actually for the public good. So they're very good examples of public signage and how it can actually do complete public harm, but from a basis of a good intention.
And the roots of the word loitering, it reminds me what's happening in the Adelaide parklands with moving people who are using those parklands who are sitting in them. There is some substance abuse, mm-hmm. and the various groups, organisations wanting those people to be moved off. You know, if it were another group of people, perhaps who didn't identify as Aboriginal, mm-hmm. they'd be all right to use the space, but the simple fact that they're Aboriginal, you know, and there might be a group of them, there may not be, kind of excludes them. It doesn't permit them to use that space.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That's what I was referring to. So I think in my presentation, I really gave examples of how we can use signage using positive psychology and how signage can create a sense of belonging and a sense of attachment using our emotions, using insertion of breaking up our unconscious daily grind and making you aware of the space that you're in, using humour, but using a sense of let's create a city where we reflect in our signage that we are citizens here and we belong here, and our stories and our use of the space is reflected. So it's really about process and interaction and engagement and a sense of pride and ownership of the city. And public signage is one of the major ways that you get those outcomes achieved for the majority of people. In fact, everyone.
Do you have some favourite examples of this?
I do. I gave some examples in the presentation where, for example, the public care items that the city needs to be put in place, for example, like fire extinguishers or parking signs or roadworks or caution this area is wet or things like that. There are wonderful examples where designers have used that sort of wonderful leap of caution, don't slip here, and they've converted a caution sign into a yellow banana peel, and that's the caution sign, and it's movable, and it's just a beautiful, funny, lovely way to give exactly the same intention, but it gives you a lateral sense because it's referred to, oh, banana peel slip. So it's a lovely way of doing it. I love that one. Another one is painting around fire extinguishers. So it's made them into a deep sea diver, and then it's got bubbles up into a thought bubble that welcomes people into the building. Another lovely example of how you can take public care items and turn them into welcoming, inclusive. This isn't not okay health and safety hit over the head and being punished or fined for not doing things right.
Because the use of language is very important. A lot of these signs that we see, they have the word no in them. Mm-hmm. Don't do this, don't do that. On a deeper level, what kind of effect do you think that has on people when they're surrounded with such negative language in the spaces, you know, when they're walking to work or in their everyday lives seeing negative language? Do you think has an effect on people?
Yes. What it does is it makes people become no people. So in the sense of, I'm picking up, yes, there's no all the time. But what I mean is that they then become vigilantes in a way. Because I'm being confined and told what my confines are, and that applies to everyone. So if you're not behaving in the way that I think, I'm not allowed to do that, so I'm going to coerce and or pull you into line if you don't behave within the confines of what that sign is telling. So you'll basically be becoming indoctrinated into a civic vigilante force of how to behave in public. And you bring people up on it. You pull them up on behaviour. You report them. You thingy them. You fine them. You dob them in and they'll help on a line, or you say something in public, or you create conflict because you're going against what I've been told I'm not allowed to do. Subversively, unconsciously, that's what all those no signs, those red signs with a big red line through them, unconsciously, that's what it's all telling you, what you can't do. So you become told then what is appropriate civic behaviour, and you become an unconscious vigilante of everyone else's behaviour.
Which is why it's really refreshing when, for example, if you have art installations in the city or suburbs or anywhere else, or perhaps there's a piece of unique architecture and it really invites people into the space. And when you see people first approach it, they're very cautious and they're, you know, kind of touching things and they're a bit uncertain, and then slowly they become more curious and expressive and they'll start to really enjoy the space, and it's almost like they're kind of going back to their primal nature.
I agree. It's going back to the sense of when you were a child and you were brought out by your parents, you went out to explore the public space. So what it's doing is inviting play. And it's inviting, yes, you can touch this. This is your space. This is your world. And I think particularly for women, it's incredibly important, because men just feel there's an entitlement, that's their space, public. Women are not brought up that way. The unconscious constructs and constrictions on how women perceive and behave in public space is very different to what men don't even question it. It's so unconscious for them that public space is their space. Women don't have the same. So to create signage and to create ways of design in public space that invite, no matter what gender, no matter what genitalia you have, no matter what skin colour you have, no matter what age you are, to invite into action and engagement and to incite and induce behaviour that is collective is incredibly powerful. And you get that through play.
And also having safe spaces, spaces where people do feel safe, and in particular case with women.
Yes. So really basic things like lighting, sight lines, access to support, really not having dark spaces or feeling like there's hiding spaces. All of these really basic things make a huge difference for women's use of space.
Here in Adelaide, what would you like to see more of walking around the city of Adelaide?
Oh, great question. I think the biggest thing I'd like to see in design in Adelaide is environmental change. I think in my presentation I said, imagine a city that valued its soil and air. And I think the city of Adelaide are on its way, but I think in terms of its design of public spaces and people's use of public spaces and reclamation of commercial areas to public citizenship areas, I'd like to see that in terms of much greater valuing of the air and soil that we breathe and we live on, and that reflected in our cityscape to a much greater degree for addressing climate change primarily, but just for the sense of experience and wide open spaces and sense of common ground that it would generate with us in the city.
And I think on top of that, that would help to acknowledge the country that we're on, Kaurna country.
Yes.
And we're on the Adelaide Plains, wide open spaces, the wide open plains. There's been a lot of good work done by Kaurna people in Adelaide, elders past and present, and to continue doing that work and acknowledge that work.
Yes, I agree. And I think, for example, a great example of where we could start changing or is around what they're going to do with the old RAH site. And I think there's an opportunity. It was missed with the Plaza redevelopment. That was an opportunity there for us to have done something for the civic space and for art, to acknowledge the artistic community in particular, that was missed. I would hate for that to be missed with the RAH, so I'm glad they've stopped and pulled that. But we're back to that thing that the state government took over there and not the council. So you can give examples of these sites in development, but it's more than just these sites of these land parcels. It's also about the laneways and all the buildings, and that there are ways of incorporating valuing land and of soil and air in how all the buildings that are built and are being retrofitted and are being, you know, renovated, that there are much more opportunities there than just the development proposals as well.
And sustainable building.
Yes, absolutely. That's, I guess, what I'm including. So Adelaide City have got some initiatives around that for residents, but I think there's a great deal more that can be done in terms of how we incorporate that environmental value into the designs.
And I think also on top of that, SACOS is really passionate about advocating for people on low incomes, so creating spaces where, you know, if people can't afford to go out and going into the city, there's often an activity associated with that and spending money, but creating spaces where people can feel comfortable to just sit and relax and enjoy the environment.
I think that's a great point, because what I touched on in my presentation was that you see it also in Henley Square, and you also see it here in some of the development in laneways happening in the city in Adelaide, is that there are seating and covered areas with shade, but they're attached to a commercial business. So you have to pay to be able to have shade and to sit somewhere, but it's actually in a public space. So one of the things I tried to address is this privatisation of public space. And councils are facilitating that, and I think they need to be challenged around reclaiming spaces that you can sit in shade and you don't feel obliged that you have to purchase something. And we need to challenge councils about that, and we need to take back citizenship spaces.
Michelle Santeev, member of the City of Adelaide Access and Inclusion Advisory Panel and a speaker at last week's Universal Design Forum here in Adelaide. To find out more about Universal Design and to read more about the speakers and themes at last week's forum, head to universaldesignforum.com.au.